Marcus Sahaba Online Radio, serving you wherever you are.
I like Tobela. You know, he's like, I told you, it's AI, it's high tech, and he's like that, hey, let's get you moving. You know, you upgrade your computer from the 286 to 486. You're going to Quadro Pro, a Pro, and this Pro, and that Pro. Well, Tobela is in that mode this morning. Lizzie, someone that I embrace and also celebrate, he's one of a kind when it comes to fishing. He's like the professori, the master tori, and the montessori of fishing. Vaizi, Irshad Vaizi, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, I'm doing all well. It's early Sunday morning, you know, I woke up getting ready for you, and then, you know, I got... Actually, the weather is actually better than what we thought. The reports were saying there was going to be wind and bad weather. And alhamdulillah, it turned out to be such a beautiful day that we blessed with this morning.
I tell you people what Vaizi is not telling you. He said, you know what? He looked at the weather pattern and he said, okay. I'm not going to launch my super yacht today. I'm not going to go boating. I'm not going to go fishing. Okay, I'll take that call from Shafaq. Yeah, I won't tell him. I won't make that excuse. Hey, chef, you know what? I can't make it. Now you're regretting, Vaizi. Are you regretting it?
You know, you're putting me between fishing and between taking your call, Father Shafat. You know, that's going to be such a hard one to answer live on radio. So maybe when we meet in person, I'm going to give you that answer.
Hey, Tobela, you know what Vaizi is telling me? Yeah, Irshad is telling me, heads you win, tails I lose. I don't know. That coin is being spun, people. It's being spun. Well, Vaizi, a lot of things happening. And I'm looking at articles in the newspapers, and you see this lobsters, they in the West Coast. They are, you know what? Literally, Vaizi, literally, they say we fed up of the sea and they're coming to shore. Why are they doing this? Why are they running away from the sea and coming to the shore? Are they fed up with this ocean? What's going on? Tell us.
You know, Shiva, they're definitely not fed up with the ocean. What actually happens is it's called a red tide. So what do we mean by a red tide? It's actually a natural phenomenon. So it's something that natural that happens. There's microscopic algae which congregate. And when they congregate, they're very toxic. And they reduce the amount of oxygen in water. And that's what makes all those crayfish, and from what I've heard, there's like 500 tons of crayfish that have actually came out of the water. So what the crayfish are actually doing is they're getting away from the toxic algae and the lack of oxygen in the water at that time. And there's so much of that algae that the water actually turns red, and that's the reason why they call it a red tide.
Yeah, you know, explained that so beautifully. This is a phenomena, Irshad. How often does it occur?
They say it occurs generally around 2 times a year, but it all depends on how excessive the algae are at the time. So I think at certain points there are so much of that algae congregating together and creating that massive red look in the water that the crayfish don't have anywhere to escape or further in to go. So in this case, there was no gap for them deeper out or anywhere else to hide from them. So they had to actually come out of the water. And it was actually, you know, shocking and sad sight to see the amount of crayfish that had actually came out of the water. And I've been reading some reports about it, that a lot of fishermen have actually taken the crayfish on the vessels and went very far out to sea and actually helped them, have revived them by throwing them back into areas where the algae are not congregating at the moment.
I tell you, that is absolutely, you know, I don't know what word to find for that, Irshad. I say that is cute. Taking those crayfish back into the deep, deep, deep waters. Now, you know, you said it turned red in color. They call it the red tide. Why didn't you phone Julius Malema and say, Juju, the sea is turning red. It's time for the EFF to come and see this phenomena. Why didn't you do that, Vaizi?
you know, I thought about that, but then first thing he's going to ask is, what do I get out of it? So I don't have anything for him. So I said, no, let me just save myself the call.
Well, Juju would have told you, you know, Irshad, I like my sushi. Can I make sushi out of this? What would you would have told him, Vaizi?
You know, I would have told him, I would make it for you myself, brother. Alema, because I know how toxic it is. So I would actually cut all for you, place it on a table, and I would even put, I'll even feed it to you.
Well, I tell you, Juju is only 41 years old, and it's amazing, Tobela. The stride that he made at such a young, he's only 41. Can you believe it, people? And he's got quite some time to go. Now, you're talking about it being toxic. Let's get serious here, Vaizi. If you happen to eat that, you die immediately. I'm talking about the crayfish.
The amount of it's very hard to get early in the morning, toxicity that is in the crayfish. It may, depending on your immune system, it could, I don't think it's going to kill you immediately, but it would affect your immune system. And if you eat quite a bit of it, there's chances of death. However, irrespective, if you eat anything that's toxic, you are going to get sick. You are going to land up in a medical facility. And sadly, I don't think our medical facility in those parts of the country are equipped to handle so many patients. So my best advice is, as much as it's crayfish, it's tempting to eat for now, just be safe. We don't know where the crayfish is being transported from or where it's coming to, because you get a lot of businessmen who will be unethical and will just want to get their hands on whatever they can and, you know, distribute around the country to make a few bucks. So my advice for now, just stay away from any crayfish that is being sold.
Now, you know, I remember in our lagoon here, a few years ago, there were fish, you know, just dying by the hundreds. And you went there, you watch them, you know, gasping for breath. And it was such a, you know, a sad sight indeed to see this fish, you know, hundreds and hundreds of them just coming up there. And some of them were quite a massive fish. And, you know, when we look at the Sapingo Beach estuary, I mean, you look at the river mouth. Once upon a time, I believe, Vaizi, we used to have pink prawns, pink salmon there. It was second to none. It was like a paradise for, you know, ecology. Talk to us about that.
You know, I remember very clearly, I must have been between 10 and 15 years old. I used to actually go there towards the evening, and a friend of mine had actually taught me how to catch the prawns from the lagoon. And I remember they were quite big, very pink in color, very clear. And yet today, you would not get one prawn out of that river. It's purely because of the amount of waste and toxins that are being dumped from the commercial factories that are coming, that are using it as an, any stream that is running along them, they are using it as an easy way out to dispose of any chemical and toxic waste that they have in their factory. So this way it saves them from paying dumping fees. And unfortunately, they are aware. I won't say people are not aware. Everybody is aware of the damage that is being caused to the environment, the fish that is suffering at the end of the river. And sadly, you know, we do not have the people in government that are interested. We don't have councillors whose hearts are in the communities. People go and make as much noise as they can, but nobody listens. So sadly, humans are killing whatever the environment is giving us.
Sad indeed. As you said, the humans are killing it, and the environment is reacting to how we as mankind, you know, what we do to it. And, you know, then you see the Durban beachfront, and also, you know, they're talking about a human waste now. You know, we're talking about all the sewage and all that getting into the ocean and actually causing a stench. And, you know, one would have thought, you know, that's what happens generally when anything that is thrown into the ocean, it is churned out, is washed out, and it's thrown back at you. One would have thought that the ocean is a washing machine, but it's certain things the ocean can't take, Vaizi. Talk to us about it.
Most definitely. You know, before we get to the washing machine, You know, a lot of what is happening is pure negligence, because instead of doing maintenance, servicing on any pipe or anything that's running towards the ocean, we are sitting in a position where government is now only fixing when it breaks. So they're not maintaining, they're not servicing, they're not checking if it needs to be fixed. So only when there is a problem, then everybody just blows their horns loud and, you know, runs to go and fix it. But they're not realizing that the damage that they're doing. And yes, now, so if you come to the ocean, whatever's not, whatever pipe breaks and all the waste that is being thrown out into the ocean, as big as the ocean is, you take a plastic bottle. They say it probably takes thousands of years to disintegrate. Any plastic that is broken into smaller pieces, turtles, whales, and other fish species are actually eating them, thinking that they are plankton and a food source that's floating around. And they cannot digest this type of food. So a lot of animals, after they die, when an autopsy is done on them, you notice the amount of plastic that is in their tummies is the reason why they are dying. So it's sad to see that we are killing the ocean. We are killing, you know, the fish species that have done nothing to us. The same fish that we rely on as a food source is what we're actually killing. So, you know, plastic is, I think, the number one killer. Any chemical waste is your other number two killer in the ocean. So, you know, I think what, and I've always said this previously as well to a lot of the schools, that, you know what, try and educate the younger generation, because they are going to be the leaders tomorrow. They are going to be the ones who can make a difference. So if we can teach the kids from nursery school and from primary school, show them videos, show them what happens to animals, how they suffer, then maybe they would make the difference. Because I think the generation that we are sitting in at the moment is only chasing money and is not looking at what is happening around them.
You know, Vaisi, you said that so beautifully. You know, the environment is dying off, species are going. But look at mankind. Look at mankind killing mankind. You know, they bring in pandemics and bring in law, warfare. Look at that warfare. You know, millions, World War One, Two, and, you know, millions and millions of young people lost their lives just to serve a one percenter that are greedy for wealth and they don't care anything. They don't care about the lives of your humankind. So where will they care about, you know, these other species that are around? But, you know, sometimes, I mean, I've been told the West, perhaps they love their animals, their dogs and cats more than the human beings are. Your reaction to that, Vaisi?
I totally agree to that. That, you know, human life, and if it's not the human life that is associated with their nationality or their color, has no value. And sadly, that is the truth. And the other sad thing is that we want to follow them. We want to admire them. So, you know, it's in a very difficult position.
As, you know, Vaisi said, what the West is spewing out, they spew it out, and we want to, yeah, lap it up. And, yeah, look at Westerners. I mean, the other day I watched the clip in a Russian was defending Islam, and he said the media has been projecting Islam as terrorists. And then he started, you know, quoting ayats from the Noble Quran, where it says, the Quran says, if you save one life, it is as if you save the life of the entire mankind. And he was talking to an elite group of influencers in Russia, and he was making an indelible impression and telling them what the true Islam is all about. There's no such thing as suicide bombing in Islam, and there's no such thing as going for soft targets, that you can't go for churches, you can't go for the synagogues, you can't go for places of worship, you can't maim, murder young men, I mean, your children, old men, women, and so forth. And, you know, this is not being projected, but what they do, they say that Muslims that have grown up in Western countries like France and maybe Britain or even the US have been programmed by the Dajjali box to believe that Islam is a religion of the terrorists, or that propagates terrorism. It says far from the truth. And these poor kids that grow up in these countries are so West-toxicated. You talked about toxins. the worst toxication of, demonizing Islam, unfortunately, have got to the youth. And in local context, some of our youngsters are being influenced. And, perhaps we should be very aware of that. Your thoughts, Sir Vaizi?
You know, Brother Shafat, what you said is so real. It is so true that, the West had this. Okay, I'm going to give you a story which applies to how I think. A few years ago, I was in Lesotho at a business meeting. And the guy that gave the talk was a man from Lesotho who was on the London magazine at the time, Finance magazine. So I went and had a chat with him. And he was telling me about how brilliant African businessmen are. So I asked him, but you never hear of it. You never see it. And his answer to me was, it's very simple. I now live in London. And I've traveled a lot to America, to all the major banks, business corporations. And the one thing I'm going to tell you, remember what I say, the West has indoctrinated its people to always believe that they are better than everybody else. And the media has said that if one person does one good thing for the day and there's 99 that did bad, the spotlight must only be on the one good thing. You never show the 99. In return, in the African countries, if there is 50 good things and 2 bad things, the idea is to always highlight the bad. So the mindset has always been that we are a lower caste for them. We are not as good as them, and we're not as intelligent as them. And it is something that's instilled into the kids from a very young age. So that's the mentality and the thinking of them. So, I think we need to wake up and realize that we should not listen to what people tell us. We should look at ourselves with ourselves.
Well said, and also when you think about that, labeling us third world, whereas Africa is the breadbasket of the world. Africa has the gold, the diamond, the uranium, the platinum, the zinc, the ore. Hey, Tobela, we can just go and tell the West, without Africa, you are nothing. Nothing. You're running with fiat money. You're running with the fiat money. You are running with paper money. You're just printing paper. And you don't have the equivalent value of the gold and silver that you are printing. It's all in Africa. Mother Africa. Tell me how you're really doing. And I will share an African proverb with you, Tobela and Irshad Vaizi. It says, you're listening. Yeah, listen. I'm going to say it properly. When two elephants fight, the grass suffers. Right? You got it, Vaizi?
Definitely.
The elephants fight. And you know who's suffering? Yeah. When the heavyweights are fighting, when the ANC is fighting, the whole South Africa is suffering. And you can see what's happening. Where we're going. Forget the grass suffering. The potholes are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, Vaizi, let's move on to your fishing. And I know you are, Alhamdulillah, you're a top businessman. You go have meetings in China, Japan, US, UK, Germany, name the countries. But, I believe that you went to China. Ibrahim Genger, the late Ibrahim Genger, used to also say, China. So I'm just doing that here with Ibrahim in thought. You remember that, Tobela, when Ibrahim went to China and he was throwing himself on some old head with that. But I believe that the pomfret fish, you ate it, you tasted it, and you tasted it in a country called China. Talk to us about that, Irshad.
Most definitely, Brother Shafat. I think I was going for about a week without any decent food. I ran out of food in different parts of China. Halal food is practically impossible to find. And I landed up at a Japanese restaurant in China, and I had the pomfret fish. So basically the pomfret fish, Shafat, is a fish that's generally caught in deep waters, but it looks like the same fish that we call pamphlet fish. So I don't know if in your young days we used to catch this angel-looking pamphlet fish on off the pipes in Rivermouth and Kai Mackenzie, it actually looks like that. And strangely, that small, probably 300-gram fish costed that time at about 300 Rand or 250, 300 Rand. And all they do is just sprinkle up probably a little bit of salt and lemon juice, and you eat the entire fish like that. So that's the pomfret fish that I tasted. But it's also caught in South Africa as well as a bycatch when you're catching your favorite hake.
You know, I smoked the hake, eh? And you give me the buttered hake with some lemon on it. And as you said, you can put your garlic sauce and all that. But you know how I like to have that baked fish, right? But I must have a thick toast. You know the thick toast? Lovely toast. I buy it from our local bakery. Yeah, be lucky. In Swinger Beach, we got a top bakery. I know, Vaisa, you go there. But always, you know, they give me their best bread. It just comes out hot. But I will even put that thick slice. I'll get it toasted. It must go golden brown. And then I'll even butter that up. And I'll just drizzle a lot of honey. And let me enjoy my fish. I tell you, Vaisi, it's a flavor to savor. And yeah, that's how I like it. If you happen to make a fish biryani, what fish will you use, Vaisi?
Okay, fish biryani, from my experience, are normally a salmon or a rock cod works the best. And the reason for that is the oil of the, from the skin of a rock cod and a salmon actually flavors the food in comparison to a normal red fish. So if you made two biryanis, fish biryanis, try it one day. Make a few with the red fish and make one with either a rock cod or a salmon. And I'm definitely going to send you a few slices of rock cod the next time I go fishing, and inshallah you're gonna tell us about the taste and how the difference was in the biryani and the moisture that was in there.
Now I tell you, Vaisi, if you bring that rock cod, Trobela, you're listening, right? I'm gonna make that biryani and I will send you a big plate of my biryani, and hey, chef, you rock with them, you rock the biryani. If you like a biryani for the Eid day, Vaisi. What's your thoughts?
Definitely a nice fish biryani on Eid lunch would be something totally different from the normal, you know, our normal plain biryani or mutton biryani, which we eat all the time. So let's see, we got what, like 3 weeks before fishing before Ramadan starts. And let's hope the weather gives us a chance and the seas flatten down so that we can go and try and get a nice, you know, a nice size rock cod. Sometimes you don't want something too big, too old, or too young. So you want about a 4 to 6 kilo rock cod, preferably a Captain Fine. And inshallah, that will go onto the Eid table as a nice fish biryani. And if I have that, I'm going to send you a picture of mine. I'm going to keep a piece for you to taste while you're on radio, and you're going to tell the listeners how it tastes.
I tell you, you got a vision. You got vision. And I tell you, you know, I was at the local barber. I don't know where you have your haircut. There was a barber down here. His name is Mohsin Shehzad. And he said, you know, Shafat Bhai, I like to be with you on the radio. Whilst you're talking, I like to cut your hair. And you can tell people how it feels. I mean, this is what he said. I said, no, you know, I can sit in your barber shop and I can record you. And I'd like to play that on air. But even the same, whilst I'm having your biryani, I can record it and play it and send you a clip also. But the beauty of broadcasting, Irshad, today, you know, they call things like podcast, and our Trobela is our master at it. They make this podcast, and the listeners can call it up at any time they want to listen to a show. They can go to the podcast and listen to it around the globe. And this is the beauty of being on an international platform. And here's your podcast being made. And, you know, alhamdulillah, talking about fish. And maybe you have changed the minds of many people to go and try rock cod. How easily is it available at the fisheries, Shad?
Well, rock cod is very easily available. It's quite a common fish. And for those guys that are fishing for them, they're currently in abundance at the moment, around the 40 meter to 70 meter mark. And alhamdulillah, this year, Allah has really blessed us with some good sized fish. And the rock cod that are coming out are nice 5 kilo, 6 kilo. You know, you're getting the bigger ones, but those are the nice ones that you can take home and enjoy a full meal with. The entire family can enjoy in biryani or fish curry. So now's the time to fish them. And now is the time to go out and buy them if you can. But, you know, Brother Shafat, there's a big difference in eating biryani from a fish that you caught or a fish that you bought. And I always say, for some reason, the fish you caught always tastes better than the one that you bought.
Yeah, I tell you this, Vaisi, you're teasing me, Vaisi. You, in other words, you reckon I must come and fish with you, catch a rock hard with my... All right, my rods got stolen long ago. You know, they like stealing the rods and all that. But maybe I'll use your rod to catch a rock hard. What bit do I use rock hard to buy? See?
See, the rod is not the problem. The reels are not the problem. It's all about the bait and the hook. But what you're going to do is we're going to use a nice big 5-0 hook with a big solid chokka on it. But I'm only going to take you fishing if we're going to do a live broadcast on a boat, catching a rock rod for our listeners. Because now I'm actually laughing in my head about you having a haircut and doing a program at the same time, because all I'm going to hear is when you're having a haircut and a program. So I'd rather you be relaxing with a rod in your hands, and we won't get the vibration of your head at the time when you're speaking.
And I'll tell you something, Vaisi. Now you don't know, our Pakistani barbers are in another league of, you know, what they do. They say, Shafat bhai, aapko machine pasand hai or kenchi? It means, in other words, do you want to be cut with a machine? I know that sound. But when the light you in the car used to go, I know what sound used to make. You used to say, vroom, 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 vroom. But no, they tell you kenchi. So I tell them, use the scissors on me. That's all. Don't go like a lawnmower. And they take the time. I make sure that they spend an hour cutting my hair, Vaisi.
Oh, yes, Brother Shafat. With your hairstyle, you definitely more than an hour. And I think now I realize why when I go to the barber shop, I've got to wait so long for my turn. I think because it's you that takes up the seat for over an hour.
What I do, I generally go there 9 in the morning when there's no one there. And that's why, you know, I'll have the attention and all three of them will be talking and we'll have a lovely conversation, like how I'm having a beautiful conversation with you this morning and everyone's enjoying you. And before I let you go, you know, we notice it's very interesting about the sharks here. You know, we look at, we have the shark repellent tables. And, you know, I wonder what's the success rate of the shark repellent tables here in Durban, as the Italians say, you're getting into Durban or in Durban, in Shark?
You know, in Durban, we mostly have shark nets more than we have shark drums. And, you know, the shark nets, I think, is something that we're all used to looking at. You know, we see those red boys floating around and we find some yellow boys on the side. So basically, wherever you see those red boys floating, about 300 to 500 meters from the shoreline, they are actually holding up nets in about 10 meters to 14 meters of water. Now, a drum line is something that's normally on the side near the yellow boy, but we're not using them as much because a lot of people have complained about the inhumane manner that it works. So what happens is, Shafat, the net, normally the sharks come, they sense the nets, and they turn around and they go back to deeper waters, or they would go to another area where there's no nets. The drum line, they actually put a big piece of bait on this drum, which is floating, with a cable and a hook. And the shark is attracted to that, and it eats that. And what happens is the hook, it gets itself hooked, and sadly, it stays there. It cannot move because the drum will not allow it to go down. And when the sharks board come to service the nets, which they normally do about twice a week, then they would remove the shark. So I think in 80% of chances are the shark is already dead. So they've eventually started cutting down on drum lines.
Very sad, very sad. Because sharks, they love motion. Eh? If they don't, they're not on the move, they die, and they like to have the freedom and so forth. Before I let you go, Vaisi, you know, I was told about this carpenter fish, and I believe that if you catch a carpenter fish, you have to go deep sea fishing. How true is that?
Very true, Shafat. Carpenter fish is a deep sea fish, and you know we've caught some. A lot of them are actually more towards the Cape Town, PE area. You get them in abundance there. They shoal fish. So, and they're about half a kg to a kg. You'll probably get 1.5, 2 kg, the bigger ones. So the good thing about them is if you're fishing, you don't need to use very big hooks. You can use like a number 2-0 hook. You can put 3-4 hooks at a time. And if you find that the right reef that they are congregating on at the time, you'll manage to get quite a few. They're also known as silvers. So sometimes you find the guys from PE that come up to Durban and they're selling fish. And you notice that the fish are not as red as our normal bottom fish. And generally, a lot of them are carpenter fish, which are a lightish red, like a silverish red in them. So, yes. And then you normally get them anything from 40 meters up to 100 meters. But majority of them would be between your 40 and your 60 meter depth.
I tell you, you took us right deep into the ocean. You were cool as a cucumber. And I really enjoyed the way you delivered your side of the show this morning. Absolutely treat your parting words this morning, Vaizi.
Well, we have a few weeks left before Ramadan. So I think, you know, it's time to get those rods out, make the most of whatever we have left before we start sitting for Ramadan, making a whole lot of zikr. And, you know, and we need to all, main parting word is, let's make dua for the entire ummah. Let's make dua that there's no war and our lives stabilize.
Ameen, Asuma, Ameen, Vaizi, you have a mashallah and a blessed day ahead. Talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to you, Brother Shafat, and all the listeners.
Alhamdulillah, beautiful indeed. With Irshad Vaizi bringing the ocean alive and much, much more.